Accession number 17618, Mr. Thomas Atkinson, Rio 2.
Mr. Atkinson, Reel 2. We were talking about your school life at the end of the last reel, Mr. Atkinson. What memories have you of school?
Oh, the memories I have at school is I hated it. I didn't like it at all. But I never got any problems with them, but the discipline in our school was pretty hard. You couldn't have a kick around the ground with a ball before you went into school, because you start to have your shoes examined to make sure that they were highly polished. You look, you'd have a pair of shoes at the time as well, and you got into trouble for the least thing, you know. I didn't like the teachers. I don't think they were very understanding at all, and they used to use the cane. Some of them did. I'm not sure the perverts myself knew where they used to use that cane. I mean, I always remember I had to bend down and I hadn't done anything, just for probably mumbling in the class. And they always said, take your punishment with a smile. And I remember he really walloped me, and I got up and smiled. Brought me back for two or three more, because I had a smile on my face, you know. That type of teacher, detested him.
Was there any subject that did interest you?
I was always interested in maths, and I was interested in geography. It was a very good subject with me. Anything to do with travelling, you know. So, English, not so good. And the English wasn't so good because I think I've got a logic mind, and all the English spelling isn't logic. And I could spell everything in a logical type of way, but something else about spelling is that I think you want to have a photogenic mind, I think, you see, and I'd never had one of them. A photogenic mind was that, if I saw a cat, all my life, say a cat and asked me to draw it, I wouldn't know what it looked like. But if the cat was sitting in front of me, I could make quite a good job of it. And I used to do good technical drawings and things like that. But anything which you had to imagine in your mind, I didn't have a photographic mind, that's what it was. And that's I think that's got a lot to do with how good people spell. But I was pretty logical I was good at maths and things like that. I was doing well, which it proved in later life, because I've never worked for a boss in my life.
We'll come to this, of course, later on when we come to your working life.
Yeah.
Did you have tests, examinations in your school life?
Oh, yeah, we had this sort of... we had the grammar school, the Bede Grammar School here, and you were very, very lucky if you got passed for that, because there was only a handful of people passed. But if you had the money, you could buy into it. And the next... that was the central schools. We had two or three central schools, and if you passed a certain thing, you went to central schools. But I didn't pass down the hall, so I went through the teaching at the school was very, very good when you compare it with today's teachings, because when I left school at 14, we were doing trigonometry and all that, which they never touched now till about 16 or 17, logarithms and things like that. We had to know all them when we were at school. So I know the teachers were hard, but they did. I mean, I can still remember, even though I've never used it, all the formulas for different, parallelograms and base times I divided by 2, all that. All them formulas are still there. Even though I left school at 14.
Was it a big school? A lot of pupils?
Well, I think it was average size school. Yeah, it was one of the average size schools. You had your infants, then you went into juniors, which is a different department altogether, and then you went into the seniors when you were about 11 or 12. Probably about 11. And they had the women, the girls, in a different, same school, but in a different section of the thing, you know.
Did you get involved with the Boy Scouts or the Boys or Church Lads Brigades?
I was the only thing I got involved with was the Baptist Church Club, which we used to go to, and I played table tennis and things like that for them.
What was a young boy growing up into man, and what were the leisure activities that you experienced?
Pictures. Football. Going to the football match. Going to see, going to the cinema. Probably five times a week. Now, the reason you might ask me why I could go five times a week. See, but the reason for that was that my brother went into all these businesses, as I told you, not all at the same time, one closed, another opened, and we eventually got into the record business, Gramophone Records. And I was working for him, and he had a stall in Jackie White's Market. We call it Jackie White's Market here in Sunderland. In fact, I think he was one of the oldest members of that market, because when he took a stall in there under old Jackie White, it was only a weekend market, it wasn't a only day market, and he sold gramophone records and books. And that's how we got into the gramophone record trade. And that was the trade I was in all my life, gramophone records. And I was fortunate that I got into the business at the right time, because a lot of people thought when the radio come onto the scene, you know, that records would go out finished. And I remember lots of little companies, record companies, packing in, jacking in, because the record was then finished. They didn't realise at the time that radio was the making of the gramophone music, but they didn't know at that time. And we were in the record business from the days of the 12-inch one-sided shellac record, and right away through into the modern CD, you know. I retired 11 years ago. CDs would just come into the market, but I saw the transition from the 78 days right away through to the 45s coming out, and the long players and the different styluses which they used.
We'll come to that later. It sounds very interesting. Still speaking about your adolescence, I suppose, and coming up to adolescence, you've mentioned that you went to the cinema. Dances, did you go to dances?
Well, I didn't go to dances. I went to skating rink. I used to go skating in Sunderland. That was a big hobby of ours. Every bit of time and you had the chance, you'd go to the skating rink. And I also used to go to boxing as well, anything, sport. Cricket I was mad on. I still think cricket's the finest game that ever was. And it annoys me when people turn around and say, cricket, that's a slow game, you know. I think it's the most intriguing game that ever was. And I'm not talking about one day cricket. I can sit and watch just for fielding, you know. I mean, a great sight for me was Rishi Carter, Ed Vanden and Durham. The way he could field on the boundary and pick up a ball at speed and send it in inch perfect to the wicketkeeper.
And these were the days when presumably lots of people went to these games.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. Well, that was the Durham Senior League that Hendon played in, and they used to have all these cups. John Saunders Cups, Echo Bowls, and that was for the night matches, and there was something going most nights of the week, you know.
Were you just watching, or did you get involved in playing the game at that level, or at least at club level?
Never did get I always was my ambition to join a cricket club, but you see, that I couldn't do on account of the Saturday workings. You see, I was working on a Saturday for my brother, or else, yeah, it was for my brother in them days, like, you see.
You said that you left school at 14,
yes.
And you went, did you go to work for your brother at that point?
Yes, I did. I was working for him before that point. I mean, I was going...
In terms of full-time.
I was going and relieving them for lunch. Because in them days, the shops used to close at 8 o'clock through the week and 9 o'clock on a Saturday. And, of course, around about 4 or 5 o'clock, my sister, who would be in one place, would want relieving for tea, you see. So I'd come from school and go and relieve her behind the counter for an hour or so. And on a Saturday afternoon, I had to go on. Well, the old market where my brother had this stall, you had to take all your goods down on a morning, back at night, you see. And in them days, I mean, not such a thing as a car transport, so you had to go and hire a barrow. And you used to hire a barrow about 9 o'clock on the morning. And he had a little shop in Suffolk Street, 4th June the week, and he used to get the goods, the records and the things, pile them on the barrow. I think the barrow used to cost you about a shilling, and if you took it back that same day, you got sixpence back. We used to pile the barrow up with goods and take it all the way down to the market, put your trestles out and get it all in. And at night time, you had this the reverse thing, all the stuff to take back and empty it back in the shop, and then take your barrow back. It's getting on for 11 o'clock by the time you took the barrow back to get your sixpence.
What time would you start in the morning?
It would be somewhere around about 10 o'clock, I should think. Yeah, good. It was a long day, yes. But I mean, I'm saying that. I mean, I wasn't there all the time, you see. I wasn't there all the time, but...
And it was the same hours, except slightly longer on a Saturday, you see?
Saturdays, 9 o'clock. Shops closed at 9 o'clock, so you were lucky if you got out that market at 10 o'clock. By the time you'd got the trestles away and got your barrow piled on and took it back quite a mile, probably a mile and a half away, and then emptied the stuff off, and it was getting on for midnight by the time you got your... I should say by the time you got home. It was long hours.
What did he pay you as a wage?
I'll tell you what. This is when I was... He used to give me half a crown to put into the bank at the school. And at that time, being able to put half a crown into the bank, I was a rich person, because the average was around about a penny or twopence a week. And I used to put half a crown in. And... he'd probably give me a couple of old pocket money, something like that, wouldn't do.
And that half a crown had to go in, he had to... What,
that went in the bank, yes. I had to take that half a crown to the school bank. And by taking half a crown, they all used to all look on me as being a rich person.
And you were saying that the things you were selling would vary depending upon which line he'd gone into at that time.
Yes, well, he started off with books, American magazines and things like that, and started introducing records.
So on the market that you were working on, prior to you finishing and working full-time, was that the record stall?
It was books and records in the old market, and I was just helping out there. But by the time I was 14 and left school, he had a shop in Hendon Road. He'd opened a shop in Hendon Road. And that shop consisted of cycle accessories. He had a Foyles library. I don't know if you've ever heard of Foyles library. He had a Foyles library there. And he sold all sorts of books. He used to buy and sell books as well as the library and gramophone records.
And these were all second-hand, were they?
No. The records, as far as I can understand, was the ones they used to buy from all these firms that was jacking them in. And remember, we were selling the new records for 5 for 2 bob. That was the price. And
these were new records that were coming from companies that were...
From wholesalers. Wholesalers
finished with that line.
Finished with that line, yeah. Yeah. He started getting a lot of stuff from what you call the World's Fair. And that's where he used to buy all his stuff from, World's Fair, and then get introduced to different companies. And he had a go at anything.
You say after leaving school, you were working in the shop.
I was working in the shop. I was in sole charge of the shop in Hendon Road at 14 year old, yes. I was in sole charge, and it was long hours. I mean, you open up at 9 o'clock, and you closed at 8 o'clock at night during the week, and you had half day off on a Wednesday. And on a Saturday, you worked till close the shop at 9 o'clock. But you never could get away at 9 o'clock. It was about 9:45 before you. That's how I never go any of my sport and activities going. The hours were too long.
It was only a Sunday that you had a day off.
Sunday was the only day I had off, yes. Yeah.
What was the ritual of Sunday in your family?
Well, I always remember Sunday, the father used to get up and do the bacon and eggs. My father used to do all the everything on a, you know, the breakfast. He used to do the breakfasts. And we used to go to, we went to Sunday school that afternoon, but not when I was 14.
Sunday lunch, in effect, would be a main dinner.
They had a main dinner on a Sunday, yes. And
was that the joint day?
It was a joint day, yes. I was at a joint. And Sunday night supper was the leftovers, and we always used to have company. Used to have uncles, cousins. My house was an open house, our house was, and I've seen my mother cooking supper for a dozen, and all the fried ups and the finish off the joint off the. Because in them days, you know, you could get a joint at the old market. You didn't buy your meat until about 7 o'clock at night. Because there weren't any fridges in them days, and that to get rid of everything at the weekend. So, we were nicely placed opposite the butchers in the market, and he used to get up an auctioneer these big joints of meat, you know. Who would give us 1 and 6 pence for this, you know? You get a smashing big joint for 1 and 6, which would have cost you about 12 quid today at today's prices. And so we weren't short of meat in them days. This was after mine. We had gone into the business side. The brother just started the business. He'd left the foundry, and his health was a lot better after he left that foundry.
Well, you started work, and you were working these long hours, and in charge of this shop.
Yeah.
What was your first wage, in effect, as a full-time worker?
First wages, I think, was about 5 shillings. 5 bob a week, something like that.
And you handed that to your mother?
Yes, you give that to your mother, and your mother might give you 1 and 6 back or something. Yeah. Yeah.
How long were you working in this capacity?
I was working in that capacity right up till I got called up.
At your brother's shop?
At my brother's shop, so well, one shop after another. He had the old market one. He finished with that. He had 1-2 shops, and the White's Market, which was a good doings. He had about 3 places going at once then, as you see. So my sister would work in one, and another sister in the other, and me in another. The whole family was involved. Even my mother used to work behind the counter, you see. That was right up till the war.
And were things improving for you financially and economically?
Yes, we were much. Of course, it improved from. They couldn't get any worse than what they were from the sort of 1926s to the 34s. You know, I mean, they were terrible times. But then on, things began to improve. Well, it was only improved because of my brother's enterprise. He was him packing up the foundry after he served his time. He didn't get onto any big money. He decided to pack it up. If he hadn't, he'd died of a chest complaint, because he had bronchitis all his life. And I didn't tell you that while my father was working at the foundry, he was a night watchman, and I had to go up there at maybe 9 o'clock at night with his sandwiches and a pot of tea. And while I was up there, I used to help him out with the fire bars. The fire bars, you see, when they were left by the workmen around about 5 o'clock, the last mould, and they were red hot, so he couldn't take them out there, but my father had the job of having to take them out, and I can always remember giving him a hand lifting the fire bars out of the moulds for him, for his 2 quid a week, well, but it was a lot of money to him in them days.
Did the young lady start appearing in your life?
Oh yes, I had a, in them days, Sunday night was a night of picking up you girls and going in the milk bar, no pubs. Used to, I don't know if you know Sunderland much, but there was a road in Crowley Road, and on a Sunday night it was just a mass of teenagers walking up and down and up and down, you know, and it was noted for it. And we spent our Sunday nights in Crowley Roads looking for girls or picking up girls, going to the milk bar, getting up with one of the assistants, taking them home, all that sort of thing. Yes, I went.
Was there much trouble, aggressiveness?
None at all. I don't ever remember being any trouble, no. All them masses of teenagers who used to walk up and down Crowley Road, you never saw any problems with them. You never saw any problems in the milk bars where they used to go in there if it was a bit wet or anything, and spend practically the whole night in there spending bathrooms. There was Lou's Milk Bar, and there was Pumpers in High Street, and we're all done good business from the teenagers.
Did you have any close friends that you met every Sunday or whenever you could?
Well, plenty of friends, yes.
I'm thinking, you know, making a friendship with one or two young men of your own age is...
Yes. It was Ernie, who used to go up to his house when he was about 14. And, well, he used to work for us in the market on a Saturday night, putting the shutters up and things like that, you know. This Ernie, and he was a great friend of mine. He's dead now. Quite a lot of my friends are dead now.
With the approaching war in the towards the late 30s, what signs were there that were you noticing that things were happening on the continent?
Oh, yes, yes. We, I mean, in them days you used to get special echoes coming out, you know. And when a special echo come out, it was usually to do with an Hitler speech or the R101 crushing and things like that. But you didn't have so much in the way of radio medium. And it was always enterprising. Now, when a special echo was come out, I used to go to the echo office and buy 2 or 3 dozen, and they used to cost you 8 pence a dozen. And you got 12 pence back for them. So when the special echo come out, you could make yourself a few bob out of them, you see.
And were those sold over the shop counter?
No, no, around the streets. No, around the streets. And if I was behind the counter, Ernie used to, I used to finance him for the papers, and he used to go and sell them, you know, depending what time the special echoes come out.
Prior to the war, were the signs of precautions being taken for an oncoming war, the sandbags appearing in front of buildings, this kind of thing?
No, I wouldn't say there was. I'll tell you one thing that sticks in my memory just prior to the war was they brought out a 6 months national service, so everybody of 20 had to go on national service for 6 months. And I can remember some of the reps who used to come round the market, you know, get yourself down to the territorial arm. If you join the territorials, you'll not have to go on this 6 months. And they were queuing up all night to join the territorials. And of course, what happened? When the war broke out, they were the first lot that was whipped away. Straight away.
What were you doing? What are your memories of that morning when war was announced, when Chamberlain made the announcement?
I was in the house and I heard it on the radio. And, oh dear, next thing we knew, there was an alert. And my gas mask had left me in the shop on the Saturday night, hadn't it?
And that had been issued before?
Little box gas mask, yeah. And, of course, first thing I had to do was to dash down to the shop and get the gas mask. But of course, it was a false alarm, as you all know, that Sunday morning.
Did it cause fear or panic, this alarm coming?
Apprehension, but I don't know. I was stupid in them days, but I was looking forward to war, you know, for the excitement of it. I thought it would be a great thing, you know. But you see, we had seen so much propaganda on the, mostly the pictures of the Maginot Line, impregnable Maginot Line, and the terrific strength of the French armies and the Danes, and any war that we had would be over pretty quick. The Germans couldn't stand up to us. And of course, the biggest shock was when they broke through so easy to Dunkirk.
Was there any apprehension in the family? You were how old when the war started?
When they were 39, so I was born 1920, so I must have been 19.
So yeah. Your parents must have been aware that you could have been called
yes,
in.
Yes.
Was any apprehension on that line? Their memories would be of the First World War.
My mother and father, of course, weren't looking forward to losing us, because two of the brothers went, and one of my sisters was in, and of course they didn't like that, obviously. Because we were a close-knit family.
Had you had air raid shelters erected for you? Around your home?
At the time I went into the army, but we had air raid shelters, public air raid shelters, very handy. And when the sirens went, my mother insisted that we all went into these air raid, communal air raid shelters. And it was a way of life. It was you met people you'd never met before, and it was there was a certain amount of excitement about it. You never thought about the vomiting, yeah? Never thought about that.
Like meeting at a club?
Just meeting in the club, yeah. And I remember during the war, it was the same thing down in the tubes in London, when you went into them, the tubes, when we come home on leave, and seeing all these people making the beds up every night. I don't know, they needed to as well in London, the amount of damage they were doing there.
Was there a feeling in the community that it would soon be over?
There was up till the Dunkirk. I think up till the Dunkirk, and then people started realising that there was going to be trouble. And that was the time that I was called up, really.
So it was about a year of the war, a few months of the war before you were called up.
Yeah.
In that period of time, did Sunderland suffer from any enemy aircraft raids or reconnaissance raids or what have you?
Yeah, I think we had. We had one in the centre of the town, the railway station was down below, and I remember the wheels of a wagon had thrown them about 150 yards into a shop window, Joseph's shop window on the other side of Union Street. Yeah, there'd one or two little skirmishes like that.
You'd be still working in the shop at this period of time?
I was still working in the shop, yeah, I was in the market, yeah.
And you had no situation where there was any bombs dropping close to you at all?
Not at that time, no. No, not at that time.
In the months prior to joining the army, were you keenly looking forward to joining?
I was, yes. I think I would have joined except for the family and the commitments I had for the family. And I was, it was a relief when I got my papers. I was looking forward to it. Yes.